This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, and Craig Bolanos joins us again. Craig, thanks for giving us your thoughts today. How are you?
I am fantastic this Friday, getting buckled in for Halloween. It's getting a little spooky out there with all these global events, wouldn't you say, John?
Yeah, no kidding. It's crazy right now. And if we only kept the conversation to our shores, the inability of Congress to order its house is actually not having that much of an effect on markets or investments, is it, or the economy yet?
Well, I think at the end of the day, we saw it took 15 times to put McCarthy in. I think we're 0-3 for the latest round for Jim Jordan. How many is it going to take? I don't know. But rumor is they're committed to getting it figured out over the weekend. I think the real story, John, that you hit is this, that 10-year Treasury getting up to 5%, a yield through which we haven't seen in 16 years. And a big part of the reason we're there is everyone's coming to the grips with the reality that over the next 10 years, the spending's not likely to dissipate much coming out of Congress, hence there's going to be a lot of issuance, and investors want to get paid. That's the real reason these interest rates are driving higher. So I guess it does tie back to Congress, as you just mentioned.
Yeah, I guess it does then. And so what does that mean in the near term, in the next year or two, for either the markets or the interest rates that the Fed is moderating?
Well, I think everybody knows because people were glued. I was glued to the television yesterday, as were many on Wall Street, because I wanted to see exactly what our fearless leader, JP Jerome Powell, was going to say. And clearly he thinks that the interest rates haven't been high enough for long enough. But the reason there was some concern and dismay during that press conference is the Federal Reserve Chair, he wasn't forceful in his comments. I would argue he even hedged a little bit, and that might mean we might just have to have an additional rate hike, even though it's certainly not coming in November. I don't think it's coming in the month of December. Don't leave it off the table. Something could be askew.
What about his remarks seem to be a little hesitant to you? What are you talking about there?
I think, you know, what we have to grapple with is, I don't want to say we're in uncharted territory, but to some degree, boy, what a tall task the Federal Reserve has. I mean, this is a very tough needle to thread. And I think about the impact of these higher rates. I mean, it's clearly showing up. I mean, you saw Tesla. I mean, Elon Musk mentioned the higher rates during what was a rather negative third quarter earnings report. And I think mom, dad, sons, daughters, Americans all across the globe are recognizing that auto loans are 8.5% to 9%. People are realizing that 30-year mortgages just touched 8%, and don't even look at the scary APR on that credit card. It's brutal. So will we continue to have this economic slowdown, or will it turn into a hard landing? Time's going to reveal what's ahead in the crystal ball.
But the economy is doing well, isn't it?
Oh, I think the economy is doing well. In fact, John, it's Friday, so can we agree to make it Happy Friday?
Okay.
Let's make it Happy Friday. I'm going to give you what makes me happy right now.
Okay. Yes.
Jobless.
Craig, what makes you happy? Go ahead, sir. Yes.
Thank you, John. The 4-week running average of jobless claims, it looks good. Not that many people are losing their job. That means a soft landing. The non-farm payrolls, that's the number of new jobs, it looks good. That's a soft landing. Retail sales, $73.9 billion. Yeah, that's a good number. It's a soft landing. In fact, even the services sector, our economy in the United States is not much manufacturing. Our economy in the U.S. is services. Soft landing. The only thing flashing caution right now is manufacturing. That's a hard landing. But when I look at the construct of this economic data, we haven't gone off a cliff. I think a soft landing is more probable. A hard landing is possible. And that's a decent setup going into the end of the year in 2024, as long as the geopolitical stuff stays contained.
What's the story on Tesla? You think it would be good if you sold more units? You drop the price a little bit. That makes it more attractive to more consumers. Sales are up, but the stock valuation is down. What's going on there, Craig?
Well, you know, it's kind of been a 1-2 punch as of late. I mean, Tesla's challenge now is as it continues to grow, it's competing directly with companies that I consider to be experience markers. I mean, think about Ford and think about how they have spent so consciously on promoting the F-150 Lightning in advance of the Tesla Cybertruck coming out. And as you said, John, those Q3 earnings that just were released this week, you know, Tesla missed on the top, they missed on the bottom. That's not necessarily a good recipe. And I kind of think Tesla lowering the price of their cars is almost a de facto marketing campaign, because that's how they're going to have to compete to drive volume and sell more units. But with China limiting graphite today, that's another problem for Tesla and every EV maker, because again, it comes down to raw materials for these batteries.
Talk to me about Netflix right now. What are you seeing and hearing about them?
Well, I tell you what, they just had a great pop. I mean, talk about pops and drops. I mean, Netflix, I mean, boy, stock is looking good. And John, I mean, I might watch Amazon Prime for Thursday Night Football, but if you're asking me what's in the Bolanos household, we're streaming on Netflix all of the time. Now, certainly Netflix stock has a long way to make its way back to its all-time high. I remember when Netflix was trading with a six handle, that's 660. Now it's only 405. But certainly the trend, that's the charts, is back in Netflix's favor.
Will you just talk a little bit more about interest rates for a second? So the mortgage rate is above 8% for a 30-year fix, and that's with good credit. What do you see on the horizon for home sales?
You know, at some point, now home sales are obviously so specific to the geography. Let's just put that on the table. I mean, certain counties in, you know, Southwest Florida remain incredibly hot, but we are starting to see some action. When I talk to realtors, when I look at the data from NAREIT, the National Association of Realtors, not everybody's getting an eight-way blind bid on a Saturday. That's not happening anymore. And at some point in time, I just think the American consumer is changing their lens. John, I mean, for so long, home ownership was the American dream. Home ownership was just something people wanted to spend money on. And I think there's been a change, a wholesale sea change, where people are focusing more on experiences than they are focusing on stuff. That's a generational attitude. And it's going to start showing up in home prices. I think there's going to be some slippage in the months to come.
You don't think that home is a good investment? I mean, you know, have money in stocks or bonds or whatever you're doing with your 401k, whatever. But it's not only been a place to live and put your stuff in, but it's been an investment vehicle.
Well, I think the benefit for so many of home ownership is forced savings. There is something to be said about forced savings. And let's not abandon how much wealth has gotten created in the real estate market, especially residential real estate for those that have been in good communities. But we have to acknowledge the fact that these higher interest rates are definitely going to be shrinking the pool of buyers, because, John, something you and I talked about a couple of months ago, I bring you back to it. I mean, how many people in that three-bedroom home who know they need to get to a fourth bedroom because the number of kids, how many of those families are going to be willing to trade a 2 or a 3% mortgage for one that starts with an 8? I think very few are going to do that. That's why you and I should be investing in bunk beds instead. I think we're going back to bunk beds and rooms. Those starter homes aren't going to be turning over the way they used to.
But if I do buy a home, or if I do own a home, don't you still see the horizon for that as an appreciating asset?
Oh, I do continue to believe that real estate shouldn't be abandoned. I don't want to dissuade anybody from owning a home, because I think real estate prices will always generally trend higher over the longer term, just as we have these inflationary pressures and we keep having more people and there's naturally less real estate. But in the short term, this exogenous shock of this huge elevation in rates that we've seen this year, I think it's going to start showing up in the suburban housing market all across the United States. I think the peak in prices has happened, generally speaking. It's just how far down the slope do we go from here on out.
Craig Bolanos is the founder and CEO of Wealth Management Group. Invest with WMG.com. Craig, we'll call you again. Thanks for your help today.
Make it a great weekend. Thanks, John.
Tom Appel joins us now, the publisher at Consumer Guide Automotive, the host of the Consumer Guide Car Stuff podcast. Hi, Tom. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me.
We were talking about Tesla stock just a moment ago with Craig Bolanos.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about anything. It would seem to me like if you sell more units, and one way to do that is to lower the price, then your value as a company or the potential for your company should go up. I guess it's not just that, but Tesla's taken a hit this week, off 9%.
Yeah, it's a crazy week for Tesla, and their business motives for what they've been doing for the last year are a little bit sketchy, I think, to a lot of people who follow the stock. And the interesting thing is that there's a lot of competition now. And since 2011, Tesla didn't really have competition in the U.S. It was really the only electric car maker, and it was the only electric car maker making cars that people wanted to buy. And that has changed dramatically in the last two, 3 years. And Tesla's market share was in danger of slipping under 50% for the first time ever. And I think it did. It's really close right now. But they made some pretty draconian price cuts to try to bolster demand for the vehicles, which is messing with everybody because normal demand for all the other cars being launched isn't there because everyone's scrambling to buy these Teslas that are cheap. But Tesla's earnings per share fell dramatically, and their profit margin, their net profit margin, which was incredibly high for the industry, was running around 17%, slipped to under 8% this quarter.
I wonder what the future is. There'll always be Teslas, say, but an individual car company making just one kind of car can't compete with a General Motors or a Ford or a Toyota. That even in the electric or hybrid category, do you think they will always be the dominant player?
Increasingly, it's looking like yes. There was a lot of talk about how the legacy automakers, cars, you know, General Motors, Ford, even Volkswagen, were going to get hurt by this. But they're making the transition to EVs, and it looks like they're going to be making it a little bit more slowly moving forward, but they seem ready to do it, and they're not going to be wiped out by the move to electric vehicles, which was kind of the story for a little while, like that these upstart car companies would just come in and dominate. But they've had a really hard time. Even Tesla, which is now successful, had a very difficult time getting to this place.
Well, it had been, and I guess will be for a while, all about charging, about efficiency of the charges and the location of the chargers. What are you writing about that?
Yeah, the interesting thing about charging, and there's a couple of things going on here, is whether or not people who buy new EVs are going to be willing to charge away from their home, especially if they can't get home charging. But one of the things I recently wrote about was about level one charging. And I think there are a lot of people who think they can get by using level one, which is wall outlet charging, literally coming home and just plugging your car into a garage outlet. And that works, and it works okay, but it's painfully slow. It can take 3 days to fully charge your vehicle. So it is not, for people who think they can get away with this and never have to buy a charger, it's not going to work for them, especially in a pinch.
Level one, you think would be the best, maybe the fastest or most efficient? Evidently not. What's the best? What's the most efficient kind of charging available right now?
There's level three, which is pay charging or DC fast charging, and that's what we're hearing about being installed all around the country. But level two is home charging, and if you have a garage and you have the place in your garage and your house can be easily wired for it, that's just a home charging unit, and it's the perfect thing for EV ownership. You can come home, plug your car in, and overnight it will fully charge. It's the great way to do it, and the beauty of overnight charging, too, is in a lot of places, electric rates drop overnight, so you're even getting your electricity a little bit more efficiently.
Wasn't there a talk about some uniformity in the industry? They don't all have the same couplers and charging stations. Is that going to happen? Is that happening?
For level one and level two charging, everything uses what is basically called a CCS charger, and that's pretty much standard. Level three is interesting because Tesla has entered the fray, and Tesla has said that they're going to make available their very fast chargers to anyone, but they use a different connector. They use a different coupler. So they're going to have to adjust, they're going to have to adapt those, and it's looking increasingly like manufacturers of other vehicles are going to start using Tesla's system as opposed to the CCS system that's already out there. It's interesting, it's a little bit confusing, and it's a little bit annoying if you're a consumer because you know all this money was spent on the infrastructure that already exists to build them one way.
Well, didn't you just a moment ago say, though, that the market for EVs is cooling a little bit? Did I hear you correctly?
No, the market for EVs isn't cooling. What seems to be cooling is the opportunity for manufacturers to sell a lot of EVs. There's more product hitting the market than there probably is demand for the EVs right now. EV share is actually up in the third quarter. It's the highest it's ever been. But there's also a lot more competition out there. So it's very difficult to make money selling an EV.
Is there a brand or a make and model that you especially like or that the industry is loving right now?
Yeah, for a while, Kia and Hyundai were really hot, and they were making really great-looking cars that were very easy to use and very easy to own and relatively affordable. They're a little bit cooler now because they don't qualify for the tax credit. They do if you lease, but it's very hard to get a mainstream consumer to lease a vehicle because they think it's a complicated tool. So it's a little confusing out there right now. Volkswagen's been stepping up their game with the ID.4, which is a compact crossover, and Mercedes is doing incredibly well with their EVs, but they're catering to a consumer base that can afford home charging and can afford the extra cost of an EV.
But if I don't lease, is there a make and model that I can buy and get? Because it's pretty sizable. Isn't it like $7,000 or $9,000 or something like that? Is there a vehicle I can buy and get the government to subsidize?
There's something like 10 vehicles right now that still qualify for that if you purchase. It's a $7,500 tax credit, and there's the Chevrolet Bolt and Bolt EUV, the Mustang Mach-E, the Ford F-150 Lightning, and the list goes on. But there's not too many vehicles on there. Oh, and amazingly, the Chrysler Pacifica plug-in hybrid has a big enough battery to qualify for the EV credit.
Big enough battery. So are you... I'm a little confused about what vehicles qualify. Do they have to be solely electric, or can they be gas-electric hybrid?
They can be gas-electric hybrid, but the only one that actually makes its way through that gate is the Chrysler Pacifica hybrid because the battery is large enough. The battery has to be a certain size, in addition to the battery having to be sourced in the U.S. and the car built in the U.S. or Canada.
If you've got a question, maybe we can help you out. 312-981-7200. This is WGN, and you're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch with Tom Appel. We'll pick up your questions in just a minute, but first let's get you more business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Chicago's Metropolitan Brewing has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. The company says it's dealing with a slump in retail sales, debt, and a rent dispute. Its taproom and brewery overlooks the Chicago River near Rockwell and Belmont. In its filing, Metropolitan Brewing says it won't make it through the winter without a comprehensive restructuring or sale. Metropolitan launched in 2008. It's one of Chicago's oldest craft breweries. Gibson's Restaurant Group is preparing to open a new location in Chicago's Fulton Market District. Cranes reports Gibson's has signed a lease on about 15,000 square feet at 919 West Fulton. The restaurant will operate on the ground floor of an 11-story building there. It's slated for opening in late 2025 or early 2026. The restaurant will be the 13th in the Chicago area for Gibson's. The vision for the eatery hasn't been decided yet. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Time for the business of food and Steve Alexander.
Thank you. It's a Mr. Fizz Friday, and we'll hear from our gardening guru, Jim Fizzell, after I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today. It's truck season. Put a Silverado in your toolbox. It's also wrap up the gardening season, isn't it, Jim?
Well, Steve, you know, next week we're going to talk about finishing up the garden, but there's some things that we need to do now. Actually, we've had a frost. We had one, I think it was Monday night or Tuesday night this past week, and that nipped the tops on a lot of stuff, but that's just a sign of things to come. I want to talk a little bit about tomatoes. Even if the vines have been killed back, the tomatoes are still good unless they were frozen. Select them by ripeness, the ripest down to the greenest. Wrap them up, each one, in a piece of newspaper, and set these out on a bench in your basement or in the storeroom in order so that you know the ripest ones are at the left and the others go on down the line, something like that. And use them as they ripen. It may take several weeks for the greenest ones to ripen. Summer squash, these are the things like zucchinis. You can pick these too. Set them in a cool, dry place or you can refrigerate them, and they will last several weeks. Now, if you're afraid that they're going to wilt, wrap them up in a plastic wrap, and that will keep the moisture in them. You can harvest your herbs at this time, too. You can take the plants out and actually dig them up, pot them up, and grow them under lights indoors. Or you can harvest the herbs, and I like to dry them on screen, set in the basement. And once they're dry, store them in paper bags in a dry place. The cold crops like broccoli, cauliflower, and so forth will tolerate a frost. In fact, they'll tolerate a freeze. They get tastier with the cold, but you don't want them to freeze solid. If that happens, you want to bring them in quickly. So you can actually store them out in the garden. You can also store the root crops out in the garden. Carrots, beets, parsnips, turnips, and so forth. Store them in the ground. Mulch them in to keep the ground from freezing on them so you can pull them when you want them. And you'll find out that the longer they stay out in the cold, the sweeter they're going to get. Eventually, the winter will catch up and put an end to the outdoor stuff. If you've properly prepared, a lot of the summer's bounty will provide for you much of the rest of the winter. So enjoy.
Mr. Fizz, Jim Fizzell on the food calendar. Today's National Chicken and Waffles Day. It's also National Brandied Fruit Day and International Chef's Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. We've got a couple more minutes with Tom Appel. We're talking about electric cars. You got a time for a couple questions from our listeners, Tom?
Sounds good.
Hey, John Williams, I'm not sure about electric cars. I'm not sure we have the infrastructure yet. I'm not against them, but I'm leery if we'll be able to handle them. What is the overall infrastructure? How far can somebody reliably go? What do you say about that?
If we're talking infrastructure in terms of the charging infrastructure, it's getting better all the time. But I think that you have to make an evaluation for yourself. If you live in the Chicago area and you're trying to get to Milwaukee or St. Louis or something like that, you can probably do fine with an EV. If you're further out west, where the population is thin and they're not going to sell electric vehicles, then you have to know, you have to do your homework and know if you can get by with charging at home or if you know where there are chargers going to be, because I think they're going to be scarce in certain geographical locations.
I've never heard those stories of somebody, you know, stranded in rural Iowa because they ran out of juice. Does that happen?
It does happen, and there's some interesting things that happen then. A lot of cars have a turtle mode or a limp home mode, where they will tap the part of the battery that shouldn't be used for battery health, but there is reserve energy. So you can usually get someplace where you might just have to plug in for a few hours to get home. But there are ways to avoid that, and then there are some safety protocols in place.
Hey, John, will you ask Tom what he thinks of the Chevy Equinox compared with the Honda and Toyota SUVs?
That's a good question. The Equinox is silently a very popular seller, but the Honda CR-V and the Toyota RAV4, very popular. They win a lot of awards. I don't want to pick one over the others. I want people to drive them, but I will say that the Chevy, a little bit less fun to drive, but maybe a little bit nicer inside. It's not Chevy's traditional role, but it's a very nice car. It's very well equipped, and it's kind of a good value. Worth looking at, but if you're thinking Honda CR-V, I would never try to talk you out of one.
Does Dodge have any truck vehicles on the horizon that are EV? Dodge?
Yeah, the Dodge Ram Rev is coming out soon. That's going to be an electric version of the 1500 pickup. We're supposed to see that, I think, in a year or so. That might be pushed back. We'll see what happens with that. We just learned that Chevy is pushing back volume production of its Silverado EV. They're going to be making some, but the full manufacturing may be delayed. So we'll see what happens. There's some question about what demand is for electric pickups, but there is one on the horizon.
Danny says, will you ask your guest if a 2008 Ford Escape Hybrid will still operate if the hybrid battery no longer works?
What happens then, and this, the short answer is yes, it'll run for a very long time, but you're not going to enjoy any hybrid benefits. So you can drive it that way for a while. I'm not aware of too many hybrid batteries completely failing. You're just not getting hybrid boost or hybrid fuel economy benefits.
This isn't a question, but you can comment on it. We love our electric car. Plug it into the wall at night, level one. We've had it for two years. We only drive about 20 miles a day in the city, so this is perfect.
Yeah. Interesting. So someone's getting by just driving 20 miles a day, and they don't have a wall chart or a level two charger. Well, good for them if that works, because they save some money.
Well, if you live and work in the city, if you've got another car to go to the suburbs, I mean, I'm not intimidated by the slow charge if I don't have to go far, right?
No, it's not. And the thing about plugging into a wall outlet is you get about 3 miles of range for every hour. So if you plug it in overnight and you're home for 10 hours, you pick up 30 miles or so. So if you're driving 20 miles a day, you're covered.
Ask Tom about solid-state batteries for cars. I don't know what that means, Tom.
Solid-state batteries is a technology that's been on the horizon, and everyone's been saying it's 5 years away. They've been saying that for about 10 years. It never quite comes to fruition, but it is sort of a panacea. It'll be a more powerful battery that is smaller and lighter and supposedly more affordable. But it's solid-state because the electrolyte, the fluid, the chemicals in the battery are literally solid. So they are denser, they are more easily located, and they should provide not a breakthrough, but a very large step in EV usefulness.
Yeah. Before I let you go, any last word of wisdom you have for our listeners in this area, Tom?
Yeah, I think we're running into a really interesting point now with EV adoption, where I think demand may slow down because we had all the early adopters, they bought their electric cars. I think the next step is people who are sort of curious mainstream shoppers, and I think they're going to take the decision more seriously. And I think that if they don't have access to level 2 home charging, they may pass. So I think we're going to see demand slow down a little bit as we move forward.
Tom Appel, publisher, Consumer Guide Automotive, and also the host of Consumer Guide Car Stuff, the podcast, consumerguide.com. Okay, Tom, good stuff as always. Thanks for your help.
Thanks, John.